Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we're going to have a really fun show, one that's, again, important and timely. We're going to speak today with the physician, Dr. Ralph LaGuardia, and we're going to talk about alternative medicine and, most importantly, what you can do to prep and prepare yourself. We have a lot of different things happening at the same time. Supply chain is an issue. Physician practices being open and accepting patients at this point is an issue. And I think the pharmacies, I've heard of medication being short, people having to wait to get their medication. So I think the more that we can take control of our lives and our health, the better off we'll be. And we're speaking with somebody today who is well-versed and actually can speak volumes about this topic because it's what he does. He lives and breathes it. Dr. LaGuardia has spent over 3 decades researching alternative ways of treating and preventing diseases of all types. He's been in private practice in Connecticut for more than 30 years. During that time, he's learned what alternative and natural methods work and which ones don't. He's read hundreds of books and research articles on alternative ways of treating different diseases and has a huge personal library of many of the out-of-print books. He's well known in the medical underground of pioneering integrative medical practitioners. And integrative medicine, if you don't know, is the new frontier of what healthcare should be. It's a combination of traditional and alternative medicine, taking the best of both to treat patients as individuals. He's the author of The Doomsday Book of Medicine, considered to be one of the best books on medical prepping. He's also written a book called The Bible of Alternative Medicine. And most recently, he's written a book called Infected, Secrets from the Medical Underground. I think your appearance today on the show, Dr. LaGuardia, is going to be eye-opening. And I think people are going to take away what they can do finally to help themselves. So I want to thank you so much for being a guest today.
My pleasure.
Let's start at the beginning. I came to an integrative approach because I had loved ones who got sick and we had to think outside of the box. How did you come to that?
Well, it was kind of a roundabout way. In high school, I was always inquisitive about medicine naturally because I became a physician ultimately, but not knowing that at the time, I somehow came across, my mother was using stuff from, she was doing alternative stuff years before that. And my aunt from California had gotten into health foods and stuff, and they read Prevention Magazine. And so my mother kind of was the first one to really turn me onto it. And then I started reading books on it in high school. And then in college, I read Linus Pauling's book, Vitamin C and Cancer, and it blew my mind because I just assumed that everyone would be doing that. And since it worked so effectively and it was so non-toxic, I thought, well, this is great. And then I learned over the years that no one was doing that. In fact, it was pretty much ignored. When I went through I went to medical school in Italy, and I had a classic education, a really great education there. And a lot of it was hands-on, and a lot of it, unlike a lot of American schools, we had a strong nutritional approach as well. Taught us a lot about nutrition and the necessity to do that. And I thought that was great. And when I came out of medical school and started my residency, I just assumed that everyone else would be on the same page. And much to my surprise, I was completely alone. They were looking at me like I had 3 heads when I suggested taking vitamin C and stuff to boost people's immune systems who had infections. When I went into practice, I just started doing it myself. I realized that the hospital was not cooperating with me. If I tried to put people on different medication, nutritional stuff, there was pretty much crickets when I was talking about it at meetings. No one had interest in it. However, no one had interest in it from the physician point of view, but from the patient point of view, they were very interested in it. And so consequently, I wound up being triple boarded eventually in bariatrics, geriatrics, and internal medicine. And I learned a lot of reading on my own. I devoured books on alternative medicine for years. And some of them were garbage. Everything is beautiful there and everything is terrible in mainstream medicine. So what I found out is I gleaned the the pearls from alternative medicine. I threw out the stuff I thought was nonsense. And I tried a lot of things over the years, but by trial and error, I realized that some things just didn't work. They were, you know, touted, but had no real basis in clinical practice. And ultimately, I didn't even know I was practicing alternative medicine until I heard years later, heard someone else describe it as, oh, that's what I do. And so consequently, I wound up with this hybrid of picking out the best things from medicine. You know, we have a lot of great things in conventional medicine and a lot of crazy things as well that I think are harmful. And I took the best things from both worlds and combined them. And that turned out to be a very potent model for curing patients, but it also at the same time, enabling them. You know, it's empowering them to take their health into their own hand. I made them responsible for it. I was sick of, you know, treating things as problems developed and not being defensive. It was all offense. I said, God, we got to have a little defense here. Why aren't we doing things proactively to prevent these problems? And patients love that. You know, they were fully on board once I sat them down and explained it to them. And that's how the evolution occurred.
I think you are hitting a very sensitive spot in conventional medicine. There seems to be, I wouldn't even say negative, it's hostile environment. If you try to go against these algorithms and the standard of care, and what strikes me, and it always has, is that the healthcare system is just underpinned by big pharma, everything, right. Whether it's the research articles that they produce that are underwritten by big pharma. I mean, there's conflict of interest is just rife through
staggering,
isn't it? And then nobody says anything. It's like the elephant in the room. It's so obvious, but if you question it, you're against the science. It's just, it's amazing.
It's whack-a-mole, unfortunately. You stick your head up and they try to crush you.
Yeah.
It's not only do they disagree with you, they want your license. they're you know, it's very hostile. So, you know, you wind up trying to stay under the radar and doing the best for your patients that you can.
Agreed. It's like underground medicine.
Right. Well, that's when, you know, in my new book, Infected, that's the subtitle, Secrets from the Medical Underground. And, you know, people think, oh, there's an official medical underground. No, there's not. But there's hundreds of people like us, doctors, who are practicing integrative medicine, alternative medicine, and not accepting this, you know, the dogma of traditional medicine and thinking outside the box and go, well, hey, you know, ozone works great. You know, nebulized hydrogen peroxide works phenomenally for infections, you know, and why aren't we doing these things? And that informal underground, medical underground, has produced some staggeringly good treatments for various things that come up. But once again, it's completely ignored despite their success rate.
You know, it's really funny. It's healthcare versus sick care. And the people who are promulgating this status quo, just treat the illness, manage it with a pill until you die, basically. The more the pills, the better.
Right.
Versus people who are getting people better. It's marketing in a sense. I mean, we have this bullhorn of, I can't even tell you how many drug commercials you watch when you're watching TV. I refuse to watch the news. But in the past, when I did, it was just drug company after drug company.
Right.
How on earth can they be honest about any health remedy when their bread is buttered one way?
Right. And my argument is that many, not all, but many of those medications, as you know, have horrific side effects, mm-hmm. you know, affecting the kidneys, the liver, you know, neurologically, they affect all kinds of organ systems. And as side effects, and they accept that as, well, that's the price you pay. You know, you have to use these medications. And my argument is the things I utilize, the nutraceuticals, have nothing but beneficial side effects. For example, with infections, why not? No one's talking about boosting people's immune systems.
Exactly.
They're talking about vaccines. They're talking about creative new medications to treat things like COVID. But no one's repurposing old drugs. You know, ivermectin, different things that the medical underground's used, and it works very well. And the bigger than the 900-pound gorilla in the room is no one's talking about boosting the immune systems. Not once do they mention high-dose vitamin C, vitamin D3. I mean, every respiratory, every virus overall is susceptible to vitamin C. It's viricidal. It kills viruses like nothing. But no one mentions it. And all the studies, even the conventional studies, are coming out now more and more showing that the lower the D3, the higher the mortality. Well, but no one's made the leap. They say, okay, yeah, that's true. We've noticed that. But no one's giving D3. So, you know.
Because it's not part of the algorithm.
Right.
And the algorithm is underwritten by the same big pharma that stands to gain. I mean, it's just right. sick. But let's take our first break, because I really want to, you know, investigate that when we come back, because okay. there's a lot of pearls in there people need to understand. So we'll come back in a second. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. And before the break, we were talking about the natural side, the, I wouldn't say holistic, because it's really what healthcare really is. It's thinking about this, really about the science and the physiology and the biology. And it's sad that the drugs that you said before the break, and I totally agree, I think it's a controlled poison. If you really want to be honest, the drugs that we write, you prescribe for our patients, it has a dose that should be used, and there's a healthy range, and then there's a toxic range.
Exactly.
So you really have to understand exactly what you're doing, and one is good, two is not better. And patients right. really don't have an indication. I think they're very uninformed about everything that they're taking. I don't even care if it's over the counter. It can interact. Let's say, for example, someone on omeprazole, right? It can leach magnesium from your system.
And B12.
That too. But they're on it for years and years. And I don't know about when you went to medical school, but when I did, we were taught it's 12 weeks max, and then you take people off these medications because it can give you problems. That's right. not the case anymore. When did that change?
Yeah, I don't know when that changed, but it certainly did. And, you know, there's the overall, the whole system has no real checks and balances in it. You know, there as far as long-term medications, people just give it as long as it's approved. They'll check things periodically. But I constantly get patients who are on polypharmacy. They're on 20 different medications. And they're actively dying in front of me. They have multi-organ failure. Everything's slowly deteriorating. And other specialists are adding things on left and right. And so I frequently take them. I say, look, I make sure everyone's on board, you know, the husband, the wife, everyone agrees. I say, look, we got to stop this. I'm going to take these 30 meds you're on, and I'm going to pick maybe four or five that I know are essential. I have to have them. And I'm going to use those, and we're going to eliminate the rest, and we'll see what happens. And invariably, they improve markedly. You know, it's just drug interactions. I mean, how many chemicals can you put into a person before they have adverse side effects? And that's never addressed.
For that. No, but they just have a drug for it, right?
Right.
So what is it? The tardive dyskinesia from taking the antipsychotic, antidepressant
right.
medicines. Now there's something for that.
Right.
How about stopping them? Or,
right.
you know, my favorite is if one doesn't work and you're still depressed, why do you need another one? Right. So they're doubling up meds because it doesn't work. This sounds eerily familiar to the vaccine, doesn't it? Where the first dose or two,
right.
you need a booster and a booster. And obviously they don't work, right?
Right. Well,
common
clearly,
sense.
Initially, the vaccine, the promise was 2 weeks on the vaccine. Once you're on the vaccine, you won't need the mask. Well, that died a horrible death. And then they say, oh, two shots are good for life. Then it became a year and a half, then a year, and then 6 months. Now it's 3 months. And they're talking about, oh, no, you need a booster. You know, I've told my patients, do not get it, you know, unless they're in horrific shape and I have no choice. You know, I told them I do not want you to get the boosters because clearly it's failed. When are people going to just admit that this has been a horrible failure? What vaccine in history has had so many side effects, has allowed people to still get the disease and still transmit it? All the studies show that fully vaccinated patients shed virus just like the unvaccinated.
More so, actually.
Yeah. So where's the advantage? I don't understand. And plus, the VAERS data is horrific if you look at it, and that's the tip of the iceberg.
I know. What, 10% actually are in VAERS, and that's
right.
really a fraction.
Right.
And you have to think about risks and benefits, and I just don't think that patients are educated. Certainly, if you're watching and reading what's come across the media, it's not the full story. Never is, no. really.
Right. Well, you know, it's fear.
Yeah.
Fear is a very potent motivator. Patients are convinced they will die if they don't get this. And they're even horrifically vaccinating their children, you know, for the same reason. When children don't, the only children that die from it have horrific medical problems, comorbidities, usually horrific asthma or something like that. A healthy child either will get it and not even know they have it, will not transmit it, or they're not super spreaders. And why are we vaccinating when the flu kills more than COVID did?
Let me ask a question, because I think people need to understand this. And since it's all about the immune system, can you answer the question, if you have natural immunity, you've had COVID, you've recovered, is that immunity better than taking a vaccine that we just described? The immunity is ephemeral, if that.
Well, the most recent studies I've read show it's between 27 and 40 times better than the vaccine itself. The vaccine itself only gives you antibodies to the spike protein. Natural immunity gives you antibodies to five different proteins on the from the COVID virus. And so it's a much more durable immunity. It's much more long lasting. And it's always worked in the past. Why is natural immunity all of a sudden be different for this virus?
I would have to agree with that. I mean, you've had childhood illnesses, and you test, you still have the antibody to them. So why, it's like recreating a wheel, but it's only for one particular section. So the variants aren't going to be covered. So why would you even be taking a booster for the original thing, right?
Right. And my argument from the very beginning was that, and once again, when I would bring this up at medical meetings, you hear crickets in the room and everyone just look at me wide-eyed and kind of think I'm insane. But my argument was that viruses always mutate in one direction. They mutate to more contagious and less lethal.
Thank you.
Yeah. The virus wants market share. The virus does not want to kill you. It wants new hosts. It has no interest in killing you. When MERS came out and SARS won, the lethality was much higher, and the virus didn't spread because people became so sick, they were bedridden, and they didn't get out and spread the virus. And so there was a thing called Muller's ratchet theory, where it came out in the 1940s, a virologist named Muller, at a meeting, said the big question was, why is sexual reproduction, why do animals reproduce sexually when it would be much more effective for them to reproduce asexually? And scientists weren't sure about it until Muller came out with his theory and said that the beauty of sexual reproduction is genetic mixing. You're combining two different genomes together, and then that shuffling of the DNA winds up with stronger, people coming out of it. When you have asexual reproduction, the problem is that you're reproducing the same genome over and over again. So viruses and bacteria that produce that way, the only way they can not reach a genetic dead end if they had a mutation that would kill them, is to mutate. And so they mutate actively just to avoid that genetic dead end of a bad mutation. So they have various mutations. And that makes a whole lot of sense when you look at the world. That's the way it is.
Well, I want to reiterate what you said, because I think people need to take this as a take-home message. As the viruses evolve and mutate, they generally get less deadly because it's a strategy to stay alive.
Yeah, and more contagious.
Right. But less toxic or less
lethal. Less
correct.
Lethal.
And that's what people need to get their heads around. Every Delta, Lambda, what are we up to now? Omicron?
Well, we're up to Omicron, but that's just the named ones. It was Alpha, Beta, Delta, and Omicron. Mm-hmm. But the British Medical Society came out a few months ago and said there was basically, at that time, about 4,000 variants. Mm-hmm. It was mutating so quickly. But just like this, Delta wasn't as deadly as the original COVID, and Omicron seems to be a whole lot of nothing. I mean, if you look at the studies out of South Africa, the reports, no one's being hospitalized. They don't even lose taste and smell. They have flu-like symptoms for a few days, some muscle aches, extreme fatigue, and then they seem to get over it. So, it's very convenient for the powers that be to have something like that, that they can use fear. Fear is a great motivator. You get people to do a lot of things if you scare them.
I agree with that. And your reptilian brain turns on and it's just survival mode, no critical thinking.
Right.
But I have a question, a corollary to that. Is there a strategy to get rid of this pandemic, to finally end it, if you just let Omicron run its course and stop the vaccine campaign so that people can get exposed, have their natural immunity kick in and finish
this? Yes.
Okay.
Exactly right. I mean, that's the only, initially, if we the World Health Organization did studies about lockdowns 2 years before we had COVID, and said lockdowns would be ridiculous. They wouldn't work. I mean, what quarantine in history did you see the healthy quarantined?
Never.
Right, it was crazy. From the very beginning, we should have quarantined the sick and perhaps the elderly and the most vulnerable people, advised them to stay. But masking and quarantining and lockdowning the healthy it made no sense at all. And medically at all, despite what Fauci says, you know, and of course it didn't work. So what happened to herd immunity?
You
can't
even mention that anymore.
No, remember Fauci said 70%, you reach herd immunity. Well, we're beyond that. And they're still touting the vaccinations. I said, eventually we'll all get it. I mean, originally people think COVID is completely novel. I mean, coronavirus, it's not. 11 to 13% of the respiratory viruses every year are coronaviruses. This one, made through gain of function, is you know, a different beast, but it's still in the same family. And apparently there are people who had SARS-1 have immunity to COVID. So there's a lot of cross reactions. So why not, if people had COVID, why aren't they immune? You know, it makes no sense. So you're right. Let people get it. Just get over it. Because eventually we'll all get a variant of it, because it'll become, like I said, more and more contagious, but less and less lethal. So it's just like a cold for a few days and you're over it.
Well, I'm glad you finally clarified that, because I think it just puts everything in an easy to digest framework. So then when we come back, I want to concentrate now on how we can boost our immune system. It's something that seems to be nebulous to people. They kind of know, but they don't. And when you start speaking like that, their eyes light up, that there's something I can do to actually help myself. And I want to make sure that we hammer that, because sure, knowledge is power. And when you know that you have another alternative, you're less likely to fall into these traps that really are endless. I just don't think anybody who's on this booster train is going to be able to get off. It's going to be the next booster. You're not going to be fully vaccinated unless you have another booster. They're right. Going to keep pulling the rug and moving the goalpost, and I'm done with it. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. LaGuardia, and he's the author of several books, one of which is Infected, Secrets of the Medical Underground, which is recently come out. How can people get your books, Doc?
They're all on Amazon. They're on booksellers everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, things like that. But, you know, just have it on Amazon. But if you type in my name, for some reason, if you type in Dr. LaGuardia, it doesn't work. You just have to put in Infected by Ralph LaGuardia, or just Infected, and it'll come up.
Well, I think people need to get out there and get these books, because if you expect to be spoon-fed, you got another thing coming. And that's a lesson, I think, that people need to learn. You must do your own research. You must stop just taking it like pablum, as much as gospel, because it's hurting us. It's not helping society. And any more lockdowns, I'm not sure most people, businesses, mental health, physical health is going to be able to be tolerated much longer, don't you think?
Oh, how much more can we take? I mean, it's going to be an economic collapse. You can't just do this to people. Besides the horrific problem, I worry so much about children being masked. Besides the hypoxemia, the low oxygen from it, the problem with facial recognition, not seeing facial cues of smiling and talking to people. Kids are isolated enough on their computers and stuff. Now to do this to them is unconscionable.
I think it's cruel, actually. So before the break, we were starting to get into the immune system, the innate immune system, and how you rev it. I mean, things that my mom used to say, and I'm sure your grandma and your mom used to tell you about how to stay healthy and what you do when you get sick, kind of blew it off, but it does make sense. Why is vitamin D so important? Because I'm seeing an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency in my practice.
Oh, everywhere. I mean, I would say 99% of the people I test have low vitamin D levels, and the other 1% are on vitamin D, so they're okay. Well, first of all, the public is unaware of the difference between fat and water-soluble vitamins. You know, vitamins come in two types, fat and water-soluble. All of them are fat-soluble, except for vitamin B complex, all the different Bs, and vitamin C. Those are water-soluble. Hence, soluble means what they dissolve in. So you could take the B and C on an empty stomach, because there's always water in your body. All the rest, multivitamins A, D, E, and K, must be taken with fat to absorb them. And that's a fact that seems no one seems to realize. And even the studies that they do check to see how vitamin D helps COVID and different things, they never mention to the participants, you have to take it with fat. So I wonder how valid they are. But that being said, vitamin D, just like vitamin C, there's no respiratory virus that is not immune to it. That is immune to it, excuse me. They all are susceptible to it. And so, and like you said, everyone's got very low vitamin D levels. Especially my patients of color, the darker they are, the worse it is, because their skin is designed to be in a tropical environment, Africa or Asia, South America, where they're exposed to sun and lots of it. And so they've developed over the centuries melanin to block that. Hence, they moved to a non-tropical environment, a temperate environment like here in the United States. And they're from the beginning, they have problems with low vitamin D. And the flip side of that is the fairer-skinned white patients are wearing sunblock when they're outside. So in effect, they have the same problem. And everyone is indoors now. No one spends time outdoors hardly. It's a rare person. And so they're not getting sun exposure at all. And what we're going to see in years to come is the consequences of this. Low vitamin D will lead to osteoporosis and all kinds of, it's more like a hormone than a vitamin. It's essential for the immune system. It's essential to build strong bones. It prevents cancer. It prevents heart disease. There's thousands of studies touting its usefulness. And so it's essential in COVID. There was just a study, I think, that came out today. Someone texted it to me. I didn't get a chance to read it through, but apparently I perused it. The lower your vitamin D, if you were below 30, which is the lowest cutoff, you would have 2.5 times a greater chance of dying from COVID.
I heard that.
Yeah. So why not give it? You know?
Exactly. And it's not even on the protocol for someone who's been infected. I really don't know who's making up these protocols. It's not like it's not
us.
No, it's definitely not. It's designed to keep, I guess, the customers coming. That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
So how much vitamin D should someone take a day?
Well, I usually put people on 50,000 of D3 once a week with a fatty meal. Or if you want to take it daily, I would advise 10,000 a day or 5,000 a day. You know, the cutoff in labs is 30, but the sweet spot is between 60 and 100. Around 80 is probably the optimal vitamin D level. And that's what alternative practitioners kind of shoot for. However, when people came down with COVID, I developed a protocol for that. And what I did was I gave them 50,000 units of D3 daily for 5 days, then once a week after that, unless they still remain sick. I'll give you an example. My Aunt Mary came down with COVID, unfortunately, last March of 2020. My cousin Bobby had gone over her house, and as all Italians, we kiss. Went over there, kissed Aunt Mary. He wound up crashing with COVID, went in the hospital, ultimately died because I couldn't get to him. He was in the hospital the whole time. Yeah, he was 75, but he was in good health, but it just somehow picked him off. However, my point is he gave it to my Aunt Mary, who was 88, a smoker with diabetes, hypertension, obesity, every problem you can have, every comorbidity. My cousin called me up and said, he's crying, said, my mother's got a temp of 102.5. She can't catch her breath. And he said, should I bring her to the hospital? I said, Paul, if we bring her to the hospital, we'll never see her again. So let's try this. I put her on 50,000 units of D3 a day. I put her on 3 grams of vitamin C the first day. The third day, I raised it to 6 grams. The fifth day, I raised it to 12 grams. I put her on zinc, selenium, iodine, and quercetin. Quercetin is an ionophore. It's the same as hydroxychloroquine, except it's natural. It's plant-based. The original studies with hydroxychloroquine, they said, oh, it doesn't work. They were not giving it with zinc. The only reason hydroxychloroquine works, just like quercetin, is it opens a channel. It's ionophore. The zinc is positively charged. The outside of the cell is positive. It repels it. So it has to go through a channel into the cell, and it opens up that channel. And then the zinc prevents the virus from replicating, all viruses. So once again, the virus has to get into the cell to replicate, it stops that. And so I put her on that. The fourth day, her fever broke. The fifth day, she tested positive. She never went in the hospital. She fully recovered.
Oh, that's a blessing.
Yeah, it works great. I mean, that, so, you know, that combination is very potent. And I've used it countless times in patients, and it's worked great. At that time, I didn't know about nebulized hydrogen peroxide. That's also fabulous. Again, you know Dave Brownstein out of Detroit? Yeah, you know, he's written many books on iodine and different things. He had 200 COVID patients that he treated with nebulized peroxide in his office. 199 of them he cured right away. One he required some ozone to add to it. But it's cheap, it's super effective, and it works fabulous. And patients can buy themselves. You can buy a nebulizer online, a desktop one for $75 on Amazon, and just get it. But you can't. You have to mix the peroxide with saline, because otherwise it's too hypotonic to put in along with water. But
for the patients, how does that? What's the mechanism of action of the hydrogen peroxide?
Hydrogen peroxide, as you know, is what the body uses to wipe out infections. The macrophages release it, and various neutrophils use that to naturally kill off infections in the body. It just explodes and kills viruses, bacteria, fungi, everything susceptible to it. And what it does is the formula for hydrogen peroxide is H2O2. And what that breaks down to is water and oxygen. And so it's great. It has no side effects. You mix it. People do various mixes. Bronstein uses a very low mixture of 0.1%. I use I take 3% hydrogen peroxide and dilute it to about 0.5%. I put 3/4 saline and just 1/4 of that. But there's really no magic to it. Several times, if I think people are really sick, I'll use a 50-50 mixture of it. And the only side effects, it'll burn your throat a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that goes away after you're done. But it works very well against all upper respiratory tract infections. There's no side effects to it.
That's amazing. And I know you talked about glutathione. Maybe you didn't, but glutathione, how does that fit in that arsenal?
Yeah, well, glutathione is fabulous. You know, it's one of the most potent, as you know, antioxidants the body makes. Previously, you couldn't take glutathione orally. It would break down your stomach. They now have liposomal glutathione that you could take. And they also have vitamin C, liposomal, that's wrapped in a fat molecule. And so it's absorbed and it's fat soluble. You can absorb it that way. But there's also other ways. There's NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine, which breaks down to glutathione or produces glutathione. And so you can nebulize that as well. Once again, mixing it in saline and using it through a nebulizer. But you could just take it orally, but it works very well to boost your immune system.
It also thins out mucus. So if you've got a respiratory infection, you'll produce the phlegm much more efficiently.
Exactly. The only bad part is it smells horrible.
You know what?
It's all right. It smells like rotten eggs, doesn't it?
No, I'd rather have that. Going to the hospital is not a thing anymore.
Right. Those mucomist treatments, that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I've written a lot of orders in my day for that.
I'm sure you have.
Right? Well, I mean, these are easy things that people can get over the counter. Now, NAC, I noticed that they've kind of made that a little bit more difficult. And they're trying, I mean, what's your opinion? And I know we're going to take a break, but after the break, I want to get your opinion on this.
They seem to
be removing anything that's good. It's becoming prescription only or just off the market.
Exactly.
So let's take a last break, and then I want you to delve into that when we come back.
Okay, sure.
You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. He's the author of The Doomsday Book of Medicine, The Bible of Alternative Medicine, and his most recent book, Secrets from Infected, Secrets from the Medical Underground. And before the break, we were getting into the fact that things work and they seem to be disappearing with intention. NAC now is like, you can't get it on Amazon. You can't really get it from health food stores anymore. It's being locked into the healthcare section, and doctors can prescribe it, but patients can't seem to get it. So what's your take on the fact that I mean, I wonder if they're going to try this with vitamin D. Are they going to try this with quercetin? Is there some underpinning to trying to make people go down one path?
It appears to be that way. I mean, I see no justification for removing NAC. You can get it anywhere else in the world. It doesn't seem to be a problem. There's no adverse side effects to it. I don't understand the rationalization for removing it from the market. You know, it makes you shake your head and wonder about things. But it's like ivermectin. I mean, ivermectin works great everywhere else in the world. The whole province of India, they handed it out and they virtually wiped out COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great. It's effective. In fact, the World Health Organization, I think it's in their top 200 drugs beneficial to mankind.
Exactly.
It wiped out river blindness and, you know, malaria. It works great. It's a potent antiviral, potent antiparasitic. It's cheap as hell. You know, but yeah, even if a doctor prescribes it now, Walgreens and nationwide, Walgreens and CVS won't fill it.
You know, this is the first time. Can you think of any other time in your career that you wrote a prescription for a patient for medical necessity and somebody told you you couldn't?
Right. Who are they?
I know. It's disgusting.
It's horrible. You would think it would be illegal. I mean, you give them a legal prescription from a licensed physician. Who are they to make that decision to turn it down?
And they are.
Yeah, they are. You have to go to compounding pharmacies to get it now.
I mean, they're practicing medicine without a license. No one's saying a darn thing about that.
Right. And right. There's no outrage about that.
No, I think, well, they're so taken with and distracted by the next variant or the next infectious issue that they're just not paying attention. You know, you mentioned India, but also Japan used ivermectin.
Yes.
And had a decimation in the number of COVID cases there.
Right, right.
How does that just get ignored?
Right. What are we afraid of? In Africa, it's over the counter. Patients take it every Sunday. It's called the Sunday drug to eliminate malaria and river blindness. They just routinely do it. There's not thousands of Africans dying from it.
I know, right?
But for some reason, it's removed here. Like hydroxychloroquine, that's Plaquenil. We used that for years for SLE patients, for lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. Gave it for years with no side effects. Had no black box warning about cardiac side effects. As soon as Trump mentioned it, they blackballed it, and it became problematic to get it. Pharmacists would question you, which, like you said, I never had a pharmacist question me about a prescription ever.
No, never. Right. And I mean, what's wrong with our colleagues that we're having our profession being overridden by pencil pushers, authoritarians, pharmacists, and everybody else who's not in that room with the patient and you.
I know I had the healthcare system come down on me hard because a ER doctor reported me because a 20-year-old patient said that I advised her not to get the vaccine. He thought this was outrageous. And so the powers that be called me up and they asked me about it. And I said, you're damn straight. I told her not to get it. I said, she's 20 years old. She had COVID already. She's trying to get pregnant. Why on earth would I give it to her? Their response was just to be safe.
I said,
safe from what? I said, when she has a miscarriage, what are you going to tell her? You know, I mean, the rate of miscarriage in vaccinated women in the first trimester is huge. And once again, no one mentions it, you know, but, I got right in their face about it. I wasn't about to back down and I saw no reason to do it.
Good for you. I mean, that's the Hippocratic Oath in action.
Right.
Being an advocate for your patient.
And in my letters to them, I said, the first thing I said to them was, they wrote me a letter after that, a very strongly 3-page letter kind of threatening me. And I said, I wrote them a 3-page response. And I said, first of all, the letter saddened me more than anything. I said, I remember the time not that long ago when doctors would actively debate things. And we had fun doing it. We'd go out to drug dinners and stuff. People would talk. Or in the doctor's lounge, you would debate things in a friendly way. No one threatened you. And better ideas rose to the top. Sometimes you were wrong. Sometimes you were right. But the beautiful part was we were colleagues. We would thrash it out between us and come up with an answer that was beneficial for our patients. Why did that end? What are we afraid of? Why are they shutting us up?
Well, we're no longer independent for the most part, right? It's all corporate employees that get letters like that written to you from the powers that be because it's a grid. And anything that threatens that power base, I think, is frightening to them, and they're going to try to remove it. That's what it seems like it's come to.
Right. Horrible.
But the only people that suffer are the patients. you know, and just being a sitting there watching this catastrophe happen is, it's devastating because we didn't go into healthcare to help hurt people or to see healthy people be damaged in any way. And it's hard to watch. It's hard to not take it. It is. It really is. And, you know, I had to take a emotional, you know, mental health, you know, I guess day or whatever you want to say to try to really get my head around this, because it's, if you're a thinker, you can see this is not, the benefit does not weigh the risk. And the outcomes aren't what they said they were going to be. And it just keeps going. They're wrong, wrong, wrong. They've been wrong for a year and a half, right? But they're still doing the same thing, expecting a different result with more aggressiveness.
Right. I mean, the Great Barrington Declaration came out with tons of courageous physicians who signed on and said, hey, are we, you know, you guys are crazy. This doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, take a step back. Let's look at this. Why aren't we looking at treatment? Why is there no treatment mentioned? You know, they're just talking about vaccinations and everything else. Why not, like I said, boost your immune system? I would be handing out vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams twice a day to everyone, and vitamin D3 to everyone, and zinc and selenium and quercetin and iodine. You know, I have this in my book. I talk about the Gang of Seven, and it's the seven things I use for, and it works against all viral infections. You know, they always tell us, except for Zovirax and a few other antivirals, oh, we have nothing to do to, you know, against a virus. That's nonsense. We have plenty of things to do against a virus. And you know, if you take vitamins A, C, and D and use those, quercetin, zinc, iodine, and selenium, that's the Gang of Seven. That destroys everything with no side effects, and at the same time, other than beneficial side effects, boosting your immune system immensely. Because people are infected only because their immune system's overcome. You cannot have an infection unless it overcomes your immune system. So why not raise the wall, build that wall around it, build that barrier up so the infection has that much more to overcome to infect you? And I just never saw the reasoning for not doing that, especially when it's harmless.
Well, let's get into numbers again. How much vitamin A should people be taking?
Same thing, 50,000, same as the D, you know, and you once again, fat soluble, you got to take it with fat. I usually start off people for prevention, like I said, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C twice a day. And if some people, the only side effect to high dose vitamin C is diarrhea in some people when you get really up. And then you just lower it back to the previous dose, or you switch to the liposomal, which is fat soluble and doesn't give you the diarrhea. The zinc, I usually use 50 milligrams a day when they're acutely ill. And quercetin, 500 milligrams, and you even do that twice a day, both of those together. You can get those together online now. They have them on Amazon combined. You can't take zinc for more than several months without adding copper to it. It'll, because it antagonizes copper uptake. So if you're on zinc a long time, and they also sell zinc-copper combinations that you can take, usually 1 milligram of copper to go with it. The selenium, I use 200 milligrams once a day. The iodine comes in various forms. You can use nascent iodine, which is drops, 10 drops a day in some water. You can use iodorol, which is a tablet, 12.5 milligrams once a day. And, you know, they always say the same things. They always say the nonsense that this is going to affect your thyroid and all this stuff. That's nonsense. In Japan, the average intake, because of their fish, high fish diet, is between 20 and 25 milligrams of iodine a day, with no problems. And it also prevents breast cysts, ovarian cysts. It lowers cancer rates. Iodine is kills every kind of microbe there ever was, and is safe as hell. There's even a guy named George Fletches, Dr. George Fletches, who did some fascinating work with studies on iodine. He was showing that giving iodine to pregnant women raised the IQ on average 20 points of the newborn.
Wow.
Look at that.
That's pretty amazing.
Right. Where was the last time you heard that?
Never.
Yeah, right. All they ever taught us in medical school was a lack of iodine leads to cretinism.
Exactly.
Right. So, but the corollary is the flip side is
you get a huge brain, you know.
Right. Why aren't obstetricians pushing this?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I would tell every pregnant patient I have, I tell them to take it. You know, half of them, the obstetricians take them off and go, oh, that's nonsense. Don't do it. It has no side effects. But, you know, once again, you know, My wife laughs. She says, "Honey, you're like she comes to meetings with me once in a while. She goes, "You're an outlier." She goes, no one knows what you're even talking about.
You keep doing that because you have your patients are blessed to have you we got to keep fighting against this tide of ignorance and, you know, distractions. And quite frankly, I think hate and love wins and truth wins. And the patients, I think, are really getting wise to how much power they have. I think this show is about taking it back. And thank you so much for coming on today, because you gave us a great synopsis of what people can do to help themselves. So in the minutes, I know it's so fast, it goes so quickly.
Oh, no, it was a lot of fun, though.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Again, how can people get your books?
Amazon has all three of my books, The Bible of Alternative Medicine, The Doomsday Book of Medicine, and my most recent one, which basically tells you how to treat every infection from head to toe, eyeballs, everything, with over-the-counter and nutraceuticals. It's called Infected Secrets from the Medical Underground.
I think people need to get that one. If they get nothing else, get that, because no matter what's coming down the pipe, you've got an answer for it. And it's, you are your own doctor at this point, unless you can hook up with Dr. LaGuardia or myself.
Right. We're unfortunately few and far between.
No, but I think we're growing. So I'm optimistic that we are no longer going to be an outlier when everything hits the fan.
Well, shows like this just, you know, empower people and teach them how to help themselves.
I love that. You know, that's the goal of the show, and you helped me achieve that today. So I want to thank you so much again for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure.
Same here. Thank you for having me. You have a great Christmas. Or can we not say that?
Oh, yeah. Please do. Merry Christmas.
Merry
Happy
Christmas
New
to
Year.
You. God bless you.
God bless you, too. Right. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.